And you coming back.
That means it's the end of Heartbreak Motel and the beginning of Music for Human Beings. So, let's do it. They have a record they like me to play. And it's now off to Ali and friends. It's coming. You can hear the record. It's trying to start. There it is.
مرحبا. مرحبا. مرحبا في ميوزك فور هيومن. I am a doctor جالس السكران. And I welcome you. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio. And we are here emphasizing you. I'm joined this evening by Aurora. Aurora, welcome.
Namaste.
Namaste alayk ya Aurora.
It is so wonderful to be back here.
Aurora, it's so good also to have you here.
Every week, this sublime presence of all those around me and this wonderful circle leaves me in such a calm, soothed state and enlightens my soul.
Enlightening is good. It's a nice thing. Well, welcome again, Aurora. Aurora, of course, is a speech specialist.
A vocal therapist, Dr. Jalas.
A vocal therapist who engages in the specialty of speech.
In vocal resonances, as affected by emotions. Well, and is used to soothe the inner broken hearts and souls of those around us.
And what breaks them?
All sorts of things. Emotional constipation, mostly. Most people out there do not take the effort or time, or perhaps they do not understand how to cleanse themselves, to allow themselves to purge all of the emotional distress within them.
They might also need more emotional fiber in their diet.
Yes, and that's certainly one thing that I encourage through vocal therapy, this emotional fiber, as you refer to it, can take so many forms.
Well, thank you again, Aurora, for coming here today or tonight. We are also joined by Professor Levine, who is a mystic Jewish professor. Welcome, Professor.
Well, it's great to be here, and you know, my pleasure in coming on the show every week is very deep and profound, and it seemed to have been getting deeper and more profounder, but I realized that it was merely the feeling of the relative blandness of my week, which compared to my visits to the show seemed so bleak and spiritually barren that I started to gain a sort of emotional dependence on these appearances. And that's why I missed last week. I was actually at a rehab center for emotional dependencies on radio shows.
You went to an emotional center?
I went to a center in Amherst, Massachusetts, which is a very lovely place, lovely part of the state. I also went to research certain plants with psychoactive properties related to elm trees. While I was there, I also checked into that rehab center so I can enjoy being on the show in a deep and profound way without the kind of emotional crash that in the past would accompany the end of the show.
Mm. So much sugar being added to you in the soul. The soul sugar.
That's right. It was a little too intense, the kind of spiritual uplift and the insight I would gain from the show. I couldn't quite, the vessel wasn't strong enough to hold the liquid that was being poured in, so I needed to strengthen the vessel a little bit.
One could almost say it was spiritually saccharine.
Saccharine spirituality, so the feeling immediately that light should begin to emerge.
No, I disagree. It wasn't saccharine. It was just too powerful.
Well, Again, welcome. Welcome, Professor Levine. Welcome back.
It's good to be back, and I hope it'll be a smooth ride.
We are also joined for the first time by tarot expert Major 18. Welcome, Major.
Hello.
Major 18, tell us about your speciality.
I peer into your soul via the cards. The cards tell me everything.
I've heard that Major 18, who is, I should mention, briefly a disciple of mine in the art of spiritual meditation, also spent some time as a watchmaker in Switzerland, and I believe he's quite proficient in the art of gear making and gear binding and watchmaking, and in general, he's an expert on time and the effect that time has on our lives as spiritual and physical beings.
Indeed. Really, everything is connected here. The time that you express through the gears of a movement is no different than the time that passes through the existence of the cards.
All of these things both have beginnings and ends, and between the beginning and the end, there is change.
Indeed. The fool's journey, as we like to call it.
I've often myself pondered this as I've looked at my wristwatch, and I see that second hand tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, relentlessly. And sometimes it makes me very angry and upset, because no matter how much I would like it to stop, it just keeps going. And I sort of meditated on this continual movement of the second hand and its sort of symbolic spiritual meaning to my life, until I finally figured out that I could actually just remove the battery from the watch and it would stop ticking.
But Professor Levine, removing the battery does not remove the immediate problem, the huge problem within you, your lack of understanding of this continuity, of this repetitive motion that is deep and dormant within you. That is what scares you. Your repetitive week.
Well, as always, it would be so repetitive if the four of us were simply talking out into the air, and so wonderful for the air to return and talk to us also. So if you are airy and would like to speak with us, the number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaba.
Hello, sir.
Caller.
Hello?
Yes, caller, welcome.
Hey, you guys are awesome.
Well, we think you are awesome, caller.
There is definitely awe all around us.
Wow, you think I'm awesome too, dude?
Highly awesome. Caller, stay with us. We'll bring a second voice also, which will be greatly awesome as well. Caller 2, marhaban.
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hello?
Yes, caller.
Hey. Oh, hi. My name is... Hello.
Welcome to the air, caller.
Thank you.
I sense a certain hesitation within your voice. What ails you?
No. I just never been on radio.
Well, it's wonderful to get your voice to be spread across the universe in the form of waves lapping over everyone's ears.
So nervous. I don't know what to say.
Well, if you think about it this way, compared to the act of dying and being cremated and having your ashes spread all over the world, this is a painless way to have your body and voice spread.
I would have you kill me. It is so hard. I'm okay.
And caller, why the difficulty? Like, you know, it's so relaxing here. It's an environment where you are welcome to be yourself. Let's bring a third voice to be welcome and to be selfless here on the air. Caller 4, welcome, marhaban. Caller?
Hello?
Yes, welcome, caller.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, we are well, thank you. Well, I can speak, of course, only for myself. But
Color 2 seems to be having some difficulties.
Caller 4. Caller, are you with us?
No. You're not here.
We may have lost the caller there, but I don't think we truly lost him. I think he merely is temporarily silent.
It's possible, indeed. Spiritual silences are also a form of change. And as we speak here, change seems inevitable. I am changing you with the power of my voice, but likewise, even if you were to turn off the radio and to listen to silence, you would continue to change inevitably.
Yes, often I say that it's the silent spaces between the spoken words that communicate the most to us.
Indeed. Let's bring in another silent space. Caller, marhaban.
Caller. Good evening.
Welcome, caller.
Good evening. The notion of spiritual saccharine intrigues me, especially in this very artificial age that we're living in, with so many things manufactured, food manufactured, satisfaction manufactured.
And so many things are manufactured. But what is manufacture? Why is the apple that is created artificially from almond paste so different than the one that is grown on the tree in a farm or an orchard? You know, I agree that they are different. I feel very different after consuming the one or the other, particularly a great quantity of one or the other. But why the difference? Why are they so different?
And color, excuse me, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, in the 70s, we were very much a saccharine nation.
The pilots, their pants.
And then in the 80s, we became equal. And then in the 90s and now in the 21st century, we're now Splenda. And you have the saccharin to aspartame, and now I don't recall what the
adjective.
Sucralose.
In Splenda. So it seems like we're just getting back to sugar. You know, there was that day when we had margarine, and everybody said, "Yeah, we got it. Margarine is so much healthier for us." And then we learn about the problems with the ingredients that are in that, and then Crisco, which we know is just awful for us. We're getting back to butter. We're getting back to sugar. We're getting back to back to nature. But from a spirituality standpoint, I do agree with the comment that one of you made earlier. That we're still in the 70s. We're still in saccharin in terms of spirituality.
Well, caller, there are so many beautiful points that you just made here. One of them is something that we discussed earlier for a short while, which is this periodicity, that we are always oscillating in our societies back and forth, but that perhaps we are approaching a medium, and perhaps in the age of Aquarius, whenever it occurs, we will reach that lack of saccharin and just reach that beautiful equilibrium that we can not be spiritually overdosing.
Let's try to bring in another voice, another sweet flavor to join in this discussion. Caller 7, marhaban.
Marhaban.
Welcome, caller.
Hey, I just wanted to tell you guys, I just want to call in and say hi. This is Officer Kip. I called in a couple weeks ago about Bible sexcapades.
Of course, Mr. Kip.
I'm back in California, and I just want to call in and say hi and say how much I appreciate what you, Dr. Jollis and Professor Levine and the physical therapist, Aurora,
Vocal therapist.
Thank you once again, Officer.
And Kip. Officer Kip, have you made any arrests in the intervening weeks?
No, I had to give up on the whole Bible sex. It didn't really work out for me.
Well, you're perhaps reaching the path to more beautiful, egregious future.
Well, I imagine the caller met his Delilah.
as it may be.
Well, I myself had a very interesting and disturbing incident. It's a true story that about a week ago, I received a phone call on my cell phone, and the caller ID just said anonymous. And it was a woman, and she said, Hello, Professor Levine, you know me. You knew me in college. She claimed that she had known me in college and that her name was Speck. And I said, I don't know anyone named Speck. I've never met anyone named Speck. Then she said, how could you not know me? I bore your child. And at this point, I got a little disturbed. And I said, well, what else do you know about me? She knew what school I had gone to. And she said, your baby has very beautiful eyes. And I said, no, I really don't know who you are. Please identify yourself. And she just started giggling in a strange way, and she asked me what color nail polish I like, asked me if I was single or married, and wouldn't really answer any of my questions. So I hung up, and she called again the next day and again asked me inane questions. She asked me how I felt about the latest episode of the TV show Lost. Still without properly identifying herself, just claiming that I was her baby's father.
When you had the second phone call,
yeah,
was there any discussion of sweetener preference?
Oh, interestingly, yes. She started talking about brown sugar versus refined white sugar. And she said that when we met at first in college, we bonded over our love for brown sugar. And the fact that we like to add brown sugar to our orange juice, because orange juice by itself is not really sweet enough. It needs a little bit of extra kick in there.
It's the acidity. The acidity can do a number on the esophagus.
Right, yeah. The esophagus can be very sensitive.
And oranges are so well naturally packaged by themselves. When you grab a slice of an orange and you peel an orange, all of those parts together, the skin, the nutrients in the pulp and in the juice itself, work together to break down that acidity and make digestion so easy. And then we take the orange in our society and squeeze it and reduce it to merely the juices.
Well, I think squeezing and reducing can be beneficial. I think that in particular Tarot, which is a technology that I have benefited greatly from, is similarly the whole of, you know, some portion of human experience distilled and refined into a number of specific points. Perhaps you could speak to that, Major 18.
Yes, I'd be happy to. What you see with the tarot process is one where the very vague facets of your life can actually be brought into focus with the right prod, if you will, in the cards that you receive.
So sort of a focusing guide.
Very much so. We all need this sometimes to be able to understand how to interpret the senses, the bombardment upon our senses.
That you mentioned prod. If we were to bring a cattle prod into the discussion, is that going to be humane? Or are you really thinking about something that's more of a proverbial prod?
Well, a cattle prod is just another one of the ways that one brands something, that one categorizes something, in the same way that we It allows for an interpretation of the theme being branded. So really, it's no different. It's another kind of tarot card.
No, the point
cattle
is...
Cattle branding now, too. Prodding and branding.
I think the purpose that Major 18 brings prodding in to the discussion is the cow that wanders away from the path. One prods the cow, and it returns to the path. And likewise, the idea or the experience that one may have, if we would like to categorize them, we gently, indicate to the thought by prodding or poking.
But at the same time, one would not ignore all the other essences of life, ignore all the other parts of life, for just one aspect, just as one would eat the entire orange and not just squeeze the juices.
But isn't there a unique experience to be had in just having the juice or just having the pulp? Isn't there something that you cannot, that is lost when you build the gestalt of the entire orange?
So you're saying separating out the components, let's say of life itself. You're living your life and you realize that some aspect of your life is creativity, some aspect of it is physical pleasure, some aspect of it is spiritual bliss, and you want to separate out those dimensions and isolate them and concentrate them in their purest form, and then experience each one in a purely unadulterated way.
Again, we're reaching back to the saccharine soul. If I may speak as someone who is on a raw foods diet and has been a non-calarian for several months, there is so much benefit to be had from the entire thing. And you lose all of that when you just concentrate on the juice.
Let's bring on yet another voice to the discussion with us. Caller, marhaban. Caller?
Hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you. I was listening last week when you were talking about emulsifying free-range lobsters. I thought that was very interesting. Also guinea pigs.
Indeed, the spiritual blending is a great and meaningful experience.
But we've now been talking about this separation, that sometimes life gives you this big ball full of many different pieces, many stuff mixed together in a sort of mishmash. And you want to separate the mish from the mosh sometimes.
From the mosh, yeah. And well, guinea pigs and lobsters, really, I think, should be separated. I enjoyed hearing men mucking about in the kitchen last week, though. It's rather unusual to have men in the kitchen. I was wondering if they had little aprons on, and it's kind of different.
Indeed. I mean, for those of us here, I think it's not too unusual for us to be in the kitchen, and... We're very casual about it. So I think you're thinking of Arthur last week, who was in our little demo area here, and he certainly is far too casual to be concerned about a spill on his clothes.
Was he cooking in the studio?
In our demo area here, in studio.
Well, I've heard that one of the forms of mixing food together, which is sort of reached a certain plateau or pinnacle of local perfection is the pizza pie, right? I mean, we think of the pizza pie as this blend of dough, tomato sauce, and cheese, and somehow this blend has achieved this maximal culinary perfection, and that, you know, removing any one of those three parts will sort of destroy the blend.
Well, color.
And let me just point out that I've heard that many of our listeners actually have these pizza parties, and they listen to the show every week with a pizza party. So I just wanted to sort of give credit to that and really give a little shout out to all our pizza party listeners. I've heard it's become a bit of a trend lately.
Pizza. Well, I'll have to have pizza next week while I'm listening.
Pizza on a Friday night is, I think, always a good thing.
Have you heard of Truvia?
Truvia.
That's a new sugar substitute.
Hmm. No, that may be the next. It seems like from our discussion, we've distilled that each decade has its own artificial flavor, and it seems that maybe this would be the next one. What is Truvia, Connor?
It's supposed to be a natural substitute for sugar, but I'm not sure if I would want to try it or not.
Well, where does it come from?
Fructose dextrose.
It's natural, but I really don't know.
See, what's beautiful to me about this is that from the artificial sweetener of the decade, we can identify from how it is sold and how, you know, the reasons for its production, a sort of zeitgeist for the age. So, you know, the early sweeteners were focusing on simply removing the calories from sugar, and now, many decades later, we are concerned with the effects on health, and there is an emphasis, a return to this idea that it must be natural.
In fact, I think that there are some theme parks now where sugar packets, or not sugar, but sweetener packets are sort of hidden throughout the park, and one has to become a hunter-gatherer again and retrieve the sweetener packets, or the little pieces of sweetener.
And there's a modern equivalent of that, which is the hoarding culture of those who hoard the sugar in the raw packets from the various Starbucks locations that are strewn throughout high socioeconomic regions.
I must say I'm guilty of this. I find the idea of such large branches disturbing, and I take the opportunity whenever I can to take some resources from these locations, and sugar in the raw is my deadly sin.
Well, sugar in the raw, of course, is one of these modern returns to the original form of sugar, right? It's not actually a sweetener.
It is it's not a very carbon neutral sugar, though. If you think about the fact that it all comes from Hawaii, and we have to ship that sugar across on diesel-powered ships,
right,
across the Pacific, and then just to get to the sugar to where we live here in the Northeast is yet another long diesel haul.
Right.
I have a suggestion. Why don't they just dump all the sugar into the sea right from Hawaii? Less diesel, and then there's sweetness for everyone.
That's an interesting idea. Another one of the environmental humanitarian hazards of the sugar that's grown in Hawaii is that, of course, Hawaii has all these volcanoes, and every so often the natives will actually sacrifice a human being to these volcanoes to make sure that the sugar continues to grow at a nice rate. It's really
they're
shocking.
Running out of virgins, so I don't think they're going to be able to use.
Well, they have
virgins
to go younger and younger every year, right? Like, you know, in the old days, 100 years ago, they could pick any old unmarried woman and say, okay, she might be 25, but we know she's a virgin because she's not
women
married.
Women are much smarter now.
Now, I mean, I've heard now to really make sure they get it, they have to go down to 8, 7-year-olds, and even then, there's no real certainty anymore.
Well, it's I don't know about
children,
all of that, but I found that eating local honey, consuming local honey, is such a great idea. It might be a little bit more expensive, but
how local are we talking? I mean, we're talking about like a beehive in your apartment.
Well, it depends. When I was out in the when I lived near the Andes, yes, I used honey that grew in my backyard. But what I found is I used to have a problem with allergies, and when I do eat local honey, those problems disappear entirely.
Hmm. See, I keep my beehive in the guest room of my house, and it's sort of a nice surprise that the guest may have to endure a few stings, but delicious honeycomb awaits them.
It's really worth it.
And here Dr. Chalice mocks me once more.
No, I appreciate honey, and honey is, of course, 98% refined sugar. So as far as a local sugar source is, you know, as long as one is needed, honey will have a place in my yard.
I have to leave the circle here in just a moment, but the gift that I might leave for the second half of the program, if I may be so bold, is to suggest that, you know, we've had a sweet first half of this show. Does it make sense to now focus on the sort of paradoxical other side of sweet, which is the savory, the salt? We know that there have been these decade-based sugar substitute trends, but there's really been no change in salt. Salt has been salt. There's been just this very continuous acceptance and use of salt. Now, granted, there's the sea salt, there's the Morton salt, there's the store brand salt.
Kosher salt.
Volcanic salt.
Well, it's mostly one salt, though.
Well, to be fair, caller, there is a stigma now against salt, perhaps not as great, but one in my age group is aware of and conscious of sodium-rich foods and the effect that it has on blood temperature and pressure.
It definitely has a horrible effect on one's vocal projections.
But there are artificial salts also. They are simply not as widely advertised.
Is that the difference? Is we're talking about going back to the cattle prod, which then led us to discussion of branding. Maybe this is really a branding issue.
I think maybe that we might be able to speak a bit on artificial sour and how unnecessary that seems.
Sour seems to be one of the least popular tastes, I would say, in general. I mean,
but it is in so many things. I mean, there is a fundamental aspect of sour to, for example, tuna salad. Which is always there.
Well, it's the great balance. There's a great balance between the sweet, the savory, and the sour. And all of your dishes, if the sour tastes were gone, would be lacking.
Don't forget the bitter. The bitter is always important.
I wonder if we can abstract away from the food aspect here and see this as a metaphor for life. I mean, our life has many different flavors in it. Every day, we probably wake up with some flavor in our mind about how this day is going to be and how our previous day was. And we live each day with some blend of the sweet, the salty, the bitter, the sour. And I think it's important to appreciate each of those tastes in our lives. If we were just happy and you know, pumped full of Prozac every day, then maybe we wouldn't really appreciate those lemon twists to our life.
Does the Passover Seder plate do a good job of sort of showing that it is a very much of a life based component to how food is regarded in Jewish culture, and it's parallel to life that the Seder plate sort of embodies a whole set of different human experiences. You've got the bitterness, you've got the sweetness, right. you've got the bone. I don't know what the bone there's for, but then you've got the egg.
Right, and many part of the eating rituals too, like the eating of the what's this called, the charoset, is this blend of apples and nuts and honey. And you eat that together with horseradish.
Don't forget the wine. The wine is a very, very important part of that.
Right. And I have a modern addition on my Seder plate. I also add the buffalo wing. I find this sort of nicely rounds out the previous aspects and adds a little bit of buffalo.
Is that in lieu of the shank bone?
No, I add it to the shank bone. The shank bone is usually roasted, and the buffalo wing, of course, is slathered in hot sauce.
Starving. I have to go. I'm going to go have a snack. So, goulet, goulet.
Goulet, goulet. Thank you so much for being on the air, caller.
Yeah, thank you once again for calling, caller. Ma'a salama. Is our other caller also leaving now?
I believe both of them have said their goodbyes.
It may indeed be so. So if you'd like to call in, we now have two lines available. The number is 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban, you're on the air. Caller?
Yes, hello.
Welcome, caller.
Thank you. I thought maybe we could go in the direction of the savory. My diet, personally, is I found that I had an experience early in my life, and since then I've transitioned to a diet entirely of blood.
So you yourself favor savory?
Yeah, it's almost entirely, and I find that sometimes when I've had a blood that has too much sugar in it, mm-hmm. or
from
chagrin,
a diabetic animal.
Yeah. That's sometimes the case.
It's rare, but also a number of marinades have a lot of sweetness. Let's bring another voice in with us to Or perhaps not. Caller,
I'd like to ask you, when you are drinking the blood of other creatures, is it purely for your nourishment or your personal taste, or do you find that it allows you to connect better with that creature?
It's an over-exaggerated connection. It's much more of like a physical nourishment that I find when I'm feasting on blood. But sometimes I think in like popular culture it just gets whether it's like Twilight or any of those sorts of...
Let's bring in another voice just to blend this in.
Caller 9, welcome.
Hello, how are you tonight?
We are well, caller, thank you. Caller, do you also, as our other caller, favor the savory, or do you favor the sweet?
I prefer the sweet, and I find the cheek of the loved one to be the most sweet ever.
The cheek of the loved one?
Mm.
And do you prefer, if I may be so bold as to ask, the rosy cheek or the pale one?
Yes, the rosy, because you get the flowery sweetness as well. That helps a lot, you see. But what I wanted to ask you about is your thoughts about the pre-digested nature of the honey.
Hmm. Oh, in general, the fact that the honey's, well, so to speak, refined through the...
Well, caller, if you consider it, all things are refined through one digestive system or another. Even the plants that we eat from the ground come from the remains of others around us.
Life is basically one big digestive tract, if you will.
Precisely, our lives, we are ourselves are being digested by time. And once again, we return to this idea of change. And yet, in spite of the fact that we are all converging, from one part of the food chain into another, from animal to plant to microcellular organism, we still retain some separation. And although the fingernail and the hair both come from the same person, they have very different flavors and textures.
I agree.
Now, you mentioned the rosy cheek of the lover as being your favorite flavor. Was that correct?
Yes, this is the truth.
Is our blood caller still there?
Mm-hmm.
Caller, would you recommend to the other caller the consumption of blood, as an experiment, especially to our caller who favors sweet things, that perhaps the blood of a diabetic duck, for example, would be particularly...
Delightful.
Well, because of my current biology, I don't really have any options, so it's a matter of necessity for me.
The blood?
Yes.
Now, is this the rosy cheek, of course, is rosy because it is full of blood. Is that correct? And so...
That
does somewhat transcend through the cheek and into the mouth.
Now, I myself do favor caressing of the cheek, both to myself from my lovers and the caressing of my lover's cheek by my hand. That's more of a tactile sensation for me rather than a taste sensation.
But warmth is a part of that connection, and the warmth of the rosy cheek, the flushed cheek,
comes from the blood as well.
I mean, can we say that the cheek of the lover has a different taste than, say, the left pinky of the lover?
There's the problem with the rosy cheek is that's basically just from very, very small capillaries. And I've found it very difficult to make that useful. But
to me, the rosy cheek seems but a barrier to the blood within. Isn't that what it's... that the tactile sensation comes about from a threshold? The threshold of the cheek is what gives us all this great caressing that we've been talking about.
is such an impervious part of the body, and it actually transcends into the longing of wanting the blood. That's what I find so enticing about it. I would never go and bite the cheek and draw the blood, but to actually taste the cheek and get the taste of the blood from there. That's what I find lots of love out of me. It's not so much the blood, it's the haunting walking of the blood. You see the difference?
So I think our caller's connection is not great there. I wanted to go back to this issue of tactile sensation, because we've been talking about taste, but I think an equally important sense of perception is touch, especially human touch.
And spiritual touch is so important. Sit back and allow your mind body to reach out and see and touch others in the spiritual plane.
I really wish that we could have all our listeners join hands together with each other at the same time. Can you imagine all our millions of listeners at the same time holding hands in a big circle, or maybe even piling on in some big heap of humanity, in some big pile of bodies, just kind of swaying and squiggling in that pile and touching and enjoying the shared humanity and the vibrations?
There would be 14.75 people.
All in a single row.
And we could melt back into one as we were
Don't
before.
You wanna love me quick?
I believe you lost the caller there.
I'm not sure if it was the connection that was bad or the caller who was slightly psychotic.
Well, happy in a way.
Well, I mean, reality can sometimes just be too harsh. And sometimes we just need to have that happy place that we can go to.
And again, that brings us back to the spiritual cleansing. The idea that we can purge our spirits, purge our emotions, and allow ourselves to start from a clean slate.
Well, you were mentioning this raw foods diet. So what kind of foods would you say have for breakfast under a raw foods diet?
Well, it varies, of course. The wonderful thing about this non-Clarianism is the great variety that one often misses when one consumes just the carbohydrates.
Let's attempt consuming a different caller's ideas. Caller, marhaban.
Hello.
Caller, welcome.
Hi. I happened to overhear you talking about foods, and I think the female host over there was talking about raw foods. And there must be a lot of washing up that you have to do with the raw foods. It must be a big hassle to wash all the berries and the things that stain. Isn't that right?
Well, caller, it's, if you think about it, the processing that's done for raw foods is actually much less than the processing required to make, say, pasta or cornbread or muffins. When you consider that you merely need to wash your food, wash your carrots and your blueberries and your broccoli.
Or indeed, right. The amount of processing. I mean, think about how much washing up has to be done after a cow. And then to reduce all of that.
Well, so does a raw foods diet allow you to eat raw meat?
It depends on the meat, of course.
You have to hunt it yourself.
Well, again, it depends. I don't eat anything that's not sustainable. But at the same time, I wish to allow myself to commune with the creature. I like to live with the deer or the cow for a while and understand it and really, truly appreciate the sacrifice.
I mean, if you wanted to really prolong that living together, you could slowly eat the animal in sort of pieces, starting from the edges of the limbs, allowing it to live as long as possible while you consume it. So like one day you might eat the feet and cauterize the wounds, and then the next day maybe eat the shins and again cauterize the wounds, and really prolong this communing with this animal as you're eating it, maybe over a period of a month or two.
You know, if you got a lizard and you kept a lizard captive and just ate its tail or legs, and they could keep growing back, and you could do that indefinitely.
Well, that's certainly something that I've explored with lizards as well as with frogs, which unfortunately did not work as well, although it was delicious.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep mostly to vegetables and fruits and the random potato.
Well, if you think about it, how much washing up could you really do without any detergent?
Well, to be honest, the washing up really is only most difficult when I must evacuate in the restroom, if you will. That's the most difficult washing up that has to be done. Otherwise, there's nothing really horrifying in nature. When you have blueberries with a little bit of dirt on them, wiping off the dirt, they have no pesticides on them. They have no chemicals on them. I grow them myself as much as I can. And it's just so beautiful to raise this plant or this creature from childhood, to allow it to be your child and then to consume it and allow it to be part of yourself.
Yeah, you know, I think with this diet, you're digging far really deep into human history, you know, like... You might want to go back to hunter-gatherer states, but you have to remember that those hunters and gatherers still cooked their food. So we're not really going back that far. To really take a step far back, you have to go before we invented cooking. Like, probably Homo erectus, maybe, or maybe even before Homo erectus.
Yeah.
Homo habilis.
Homo habilis, I believe, probably did cook.
I'm certain, but I doubt that a previous version... of Homo.
Yeah, there's some Homo cooked. Which didn't cook.
Precisely.
But I wonder...
Yeah, like in the tribe of Solomon days.
But I must say, I have been on this non-Clarianism for 2.5 to 3 months right at this moment. And at the beginning, while it was difficult, I had extreme cravings and emotional swings. I have never been so calm as I am now, and I have never felt so alive.
Right, but how much less calm would you be without any detergent to help you along?
I don't actually use detergent, Caller.
But I think that the caller may be suggesting that a detergent or other aids to the cleaning, so perhaps a tribe of small children that could do the washing also.
Mm-hmm. And think about your friends. I mean, when you're hanging out with your friends, cooking, eating raw foods, hunting, if you had no detergent to clean up, how much time would it take? It would just be unmanageable, you know? And that's the thing about living in society. You have to deal with things one thing at a time. And so that's why
I mean, personally,
is so great.
I own a flock of cats. And the nice thing about cats is, of course, that their saliva has a natural, sustainable detergent-like quality. And so I just put catnip on anything which I want to have washed, and then the cats go to work on it. The whole flock.
Their genitals.
They lick the whole thing clean, and their saliva naturally dissolves dirt and destroys bacteria. And I find this a very beautiful way to live.
But caller, you know, speaking of clean. You know, Major 18, I've noticed that your robes are quite glistening and glowing, in fact. And I was wondering, because early I assumed that they had simply been dipped in water immediately prior to the program, but they continue to glisten. Is this one of these changes which you have managed to control?
Once you reach a certain level of connection with the world, you begin to gain the ability to control, to very small extents, to influence, if you will, the physical properties around you. And that glisten that you see is nothing more than my subconscious communicating its own mind.
You're directing the light flow, I think, right? The reflections of the light from your body into our eyes.
That's right. The light that I can harness with the spiritual connection I have with the direct physical space around me, the atoms that comprise this air, that I can connect with the atoms that form me.
Hmm. Well, Aurora, I've noticed that you've lately been wearing this kind of leotard, this goatskin leotard, and I wondered whether that was a result of your raw food diet, if somehow you had transferred that into the clothing domain as well.
Well, in a certain sense, yes. As I mentioned before, I do like to commune with those creatures that I eventually consume. And I wish to use as much of their sacrifice as possible. And so this is my good friend, Frederick.
I mean, I like how the horns, you position the horns so they kind of dangle from, you know, your posterior area in a kind of alluring way.
Oh, well, thank you. That was not actually intentional, and it can be bothersome when I am attempting to sit down.
Sit, yeah.
But it's wonderful because Frederick is always embracing me, and he is always a part of me because I have consumed him and continue to do so. And it's, I appreciate him so much that I wish to use every piece of him.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when you know, human beings bury their pets. I think the ultimate devotion to the pet would be to use whatever remains of the carcass are left, you know, to skin them and to wear the skin or to hang it up on the wall.
Or to make a beautiful purse.
To make guitar strings from the intestines.
Or perhaps they should leave it to the scavengers of the world. My colleagues in Tibet, they practice this ritual called sky burial, where the dead, including the dead, are honored by leaving them on the high mountaintops, where they are then enjoyed by the earth once again.
And the vultures, right?
Well, yes, the connection that it makes, and how we become a part of that food cycle again.
I've wondered, do vultures feel guilty when they consume dead nuns?
Or indeed, dead vultures.
Are vultures cannibalistic?
Well, I don't think there's really anything for them to be ashamed of. They're allowing a nun, this spiritual type of woman, to become part of themselves.
Hmm.
And they are being enriched by her.
So that's just part of the natural process.
They are honoring the nun. That is what they do when they consume her.
But so much of this all is really about control. The idea that one might want to do some washing is to control one's appearance. You know, and this matter of glistening, it's, you know, again, change is the thing that is normal. And we rarely assume change. We cannot deal with constant change. And we assume some amount of constancy in everything.
Well, that is exactly why we are evolved, to see patterns everywhere, to see this repetitiveness and to appreciate the ticking of the clock.
Well, after saying that, or I really now am, I just put the battery back into my watch, because I think I can accept the constancy of that tick-tock, tick-tock of the second hand, and I can allow it to march forward and just sort of anchor myself with that constancy and allow myself the flexibility of living my life now.
It's such an interesting thing to think that for much of human history, preventing change was not even a considered thing, that it was so impossible that it was a great challenge to even attempt to measure change.
A flux capacitor, if you will.
Well, speaking of the flux capacitor, you know, we've been talking about the decades, the sweeteners of various decades. I've always thought of the 80s as the Michael J. Fox decade, more than the sucralose decade myself.
And so it unfortunately shall remain. But once again, my great friends, we've reached the end of the hour. So thank you for being with us, Major 18.
Thank you. This was a real pleasant experience.
And to Professor Levine.
Oh, again, it was my deep pleasure, and I hope that this time I don't have that sort of emotional post-music for human beings crash.
I share my prayers here with yours. And, of course, to Aurora.
It was wonderful to be part of this circle today. Namaste.
I am Addictor Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you here on WMBR Cambridge 88.1 FM. Stay tuned for Acts Beyond Words. Ma'asalama.
four points for safety.
Number one,
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice, be legal, be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.